This week on the Mountain Lion Chalk Talk podcast, Jake sits down with the coaching staff of the men's soccer team to talk about the transition from last year's team, the tight field inside the Armac, and the heightened expectations for the season. This is the Mountain Lion Chalk Talk podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Mountain Lion Chalk Talk podcast. As always, my name is Jake Ross, and I hope you had a wonderful week. And we'll look back at the week that was in Mountain Lion athletics, and we'll start right where we left off as the men's and women's soccer team had completed action last week, with the women's soccer team taking a 6-0 victory over Western Colorado and the men's soccer team taking that commanding 11-0 win over Adams State. The very last event that we spoke about was the volleyball match against MSU Denver, the number 4 ranked squad in the country. They were in the middle of that match, I should say, when we finished up last week's episode. The Mountain Lions did end up getting swept in that match, no sets to 3, as the Roadrunners of MSU moved up in the rankings this week and are now number 2 overall in the country. So can't really complain about not getting that win if you're the UCCS women's volleyball team. Men's cross country and women's cross country were up at the MSU Denver Invite. 8K for the men, 6K for the women. The men's team only had about 4 runners compete. The top runners were like 52nd and 53rd overall. I think there was 74th and 82 as well finishers for the Mountain Lion men. The women's cross country team was 5th out of 11 teams, up in Wash Park last weekend for the MSU Denver Invite. The volleyball team finished up action on the 17th with a match up in Lakewood against Colorado Christian. Also were swept 3-0 in that match, that put them down 0-4 in RMAC play to end the weekend. The Mountain Lions finished up the weekend at home on the soccer pitch. The men's soccer team taking on Colorado Christian. They got a couple of late goals. It was scoreless for most of the game, but then they broke the tie. They had a free kick just outside the box. Luka Cecic put in a beautiful set piece. The initial save was made by the Christian keeper, but it went right back out to Marvin Putu, and he buried it top right side to give the Mountain Lions a 1-0 lead. And then just a few minutes later, the Cougars of Colorado Christian had a corner kick on the Mountain Lion side of the field. They brought their keeper all the way down to try and sell out to get the tie in that game. The Mountain Lions were able to poke it away from them, and Colby Ranieri had the easiest goal he's ever scored because the goalkeeper was on the other side of the field, and they won that one 2-0. The women's soccer team followed that up with a convincing win over Fort Lewis College. The Skyhawks came to town and were beaten by UCCS 3-0 to end the weekend for UCCS athletics. As we get started with athletics this weekend, men's and women's soccer started things off in Salt Lake City, Utah. They were taking on Westminster College, as it's the first weekend of RMAC play for the men's side, the second weekend of RMAC play for the women's side. Women's dropped their first game of RMAC play. They lost that one 2-0, and the Mountain Lion men pick up their first win of RMAC play, defeating the Griffins of Westminster College 3-0 in Salt Lake City. If the men's soccer team is not ranked next week, I do not understand the rankings process anymore. They should have been arguably ranked this week, in my humble opinion. But for the second week in a row, they were just receiving votes. The women's soccer team in that vote, as well, just receiving votes. The men's soccer team is a top 25 team. They beat Fort Hays when they were the seventh ranked team in the country. They're like have the fifth hardest schedule in the nation in terms of RPI. They are performing at a very high level. I think it's going to come down to this game coming up against Colorado Mesa later this weekend, which we'll talk about at the end of the episode. They need to win that game, but in my personal opinion, they should have been ranked this week, and this win against Westminster 3-0 should put them over that hump and get them into the top 25. We'll see next week. If they're not there, I'm going to be very upset, so strap in for that one. Volleyball just got done with their match just about an hour ago now. Whiteout night at Gallaglia Event Center. Great turnout, as per always, for Whiteout night. Free t-shirts always gets college kids excited, so there were lots of people there in attendance. And the Mountain Lions picked up their first win of RMAC play. They improved to 1-4 overall as they defeated Adams State 3-1. They won the first two sets. Dropped the third set, though. That one was very back and forth. Adams State began to pull away at the end of that set, ended up winning it 25-20. Mountain Lions came back and won set number four in commanding fashion, and that was a game that they had to win, and they went out and took care of business and got things done. So good to see for the women's volleyball team. All eyes for me, though, are on men's soccer. The fact that they, like I said, weren't ranked is beyond me. So we'll turn our attention to our interview of the week. On that note, perfect segue. It is the men's soccer coaching staff in Keith Bedaris, the assistant coach, as well as Lewis Wilcox, the head coach of the men's program. We sat down last week, kind of talked about how they're getting ready for RMAC play. It was before these last two games that they played against CCU and Adams State. Little did we know they were about to explode for 11 goals against Adams State. That was quite a game. But yeah, great couple of guys down there on the men's soccer side of things. Lewis Wilcox, Keith Bedaris, always a great time to sit down and talk to them. They've always got some great insight. They know the game of soccer inside and out, and they are just a fun bunch to sit down and talk to. We talked about a range of things, recruiting, kind of the start that they're off to, where they finished up last year, the tough landscape of men's soccer in the RMAC. So I think you'll enjoy this one. And without further ado, I'll turn it over to them. So this is our interview of the week with the men's soccer coaching staff. Enjoy, everybody. All right, everyone, welcome into this week's interview of the week, and I'm in the office of our men's soccer coaching staff, Lewis Wilcox and Keith Bedaris. And guys, thank you for sitting down with me this week.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And so just to kind of start, obviously, Lewis, you're from Wales, and Keith, you are from Fort Collins, Colorado.
Yes.
Those two places are not very close to each other, so kind of talk us through how your paths cross originally and how you first got connected with each other.
Sure, yeah. Lewis and I have known each other for a few years. We met each other at a recruiting event in Denver. I remember it was at Dick's where the Rapids play, and a lot of coaches there. But I knew that I hadn't met Lewis yet in person, and I wanted to introduce myself. So that was the day that we first met. We worked a recruiting event. And then from there, it was staying in touch, keeping in touch and making sure that we're following each other's programs. I was at the junior college, Northeastern Junior College, and was sending Lewis a lot of information on our sophomores that were going to graduate. And, you know, I think that was kind of the first little bit of our communication along with the camp.
Yeah, I was always very impressed with the program Keith ran at Northeastern Junior College, to be honest. And I think when I was at my previous school in the NAIA, and then even here at UCCS, had a lot of contact with him. Never really able to get any of his players. He had a lot of good players, and he ran a good program. But I think what stood out was he did a really good job, better than most, at promoting his players at Northeastern Junior College. And I took note of that, and I was always very impressed by that. So when it did come time to, you know, last year when I was looking for an assistant coach, when Keith reached out about the potential and about his situation there, and it was an absolute no-brainer for me. I think I absolutely got lucky in that regard, and it was the right time and the right place, and you know, we had a phone call and it was a no-brainer. So that was kind of how things lined up. So,
and so obviously you guys have been around the game respectively your whole lives, but and Lewis, we'll start with you. How did you kind of make that first transition of moving from playing into coaching? And obviously with athletics, the game will always tell you when that time comes. But what kind of, whether it was the opportunity on the coaching side or something happened on the playing side, what kind of showed you that coaching was the path?
Yeah, it was exactly that. It was an opportunity to coach and to get my master's at the school that I had graduated from with my bachelor's. So I played at Midland University in Fremont, Nebraska, which is an NAIA school. Had a great time there. We had a lot of success as a team when I was a player. And I think I got presented with an opportunity to be a graduate assistant. At the time, I graduated after 3 years, which lined up well because I only had 3 years of playing eligibility. So graduated and was presented with the opportunity to be a GA. So for me, it was a no-brainer. As an international student, or as an international in general, in this country, you'll find a lot of graduate assistants are internationals because it's simply an extension of your student visa. So it's a really good way to get into the coaching, into college coaching, without really having to get a working visa or anything like that. And I knew the opportunity that I was going into, I was going to get a lot of experience. The head coach at the time, Sean Fraser, is a very good coach, and I learned a lot from him when I was a player. And I knew getting the opportunity to go and coach under him as a young coach just starting out was something I had to jump on. So I was presented with that. I think I was 21 at the time, so really young getting into it. But I knew that if I could start young, I knew it was a good path, and I wanted to be a full-time college soccer coach. So yeah, that opportunity was there, and I had to take it. I think at the time I was in a very serious relationship with my now wife. So for me, staying in the country was important. Being around the college game was important. I knew that I could probably go and chase some sort of pro career, whether short or long, at whatever level, I don't know. I always wanted to go and be a professional soccer player. Of course I did. But I think it was a rational decision on my behalf to kind of just get stuck into coaching straight away. And unfortunately for me, I was a goalkeeper. And usually a lot of those GA positions are given to goalkeeper coaches.
So, yeah, because you see the field from behind the player.
Yeah, so it was an opportunity for me to just go in, get stuck in. But I always knew I wanted to kind of get away from the goalkeeper coach side of things and be a head coach eventually. So, but that's kind of how I got started.
And Keith, what about you?
Yeah, I grew up in Fort Collins, Colorado. So I was always interested in Colorado State University. So that's where I ended up. I attended there and I started coaching my freshman year along with playing on their club team. It's good level of soccer that I was playing while also working and then also coaching. So I stayed busy during my college. It was club soccer when I first started, Fort Collins Arsenal. And they're still around, the Arsenal Club up there, one of the best clubs in the state. And they've done a great job to, help promote a lot of, some of the girls that we're seeing on the U.S. national team. Grew up with the Arsenal program. So, it was a great place to start. That's where I played when I was younger. And then from there, it was, worked my way into some high school coaching in the Denver area. Then I was moving around the Denver area, continuing to coach in club, coach in high school, while also working full time. This was after I graduated Colorado State. And then some things happen in life where you're looking for just a change and looking for a new challenge. And I said, I want to do this full time. I want to coach soccer for a living. It's my passion. It's what I want to do. And so I was, starting that. I ended up applying for the Northeastern Junior College assistant coach that I had, just happened to find that they were hiring. And I think that the world was aligning at that time to, kind of put me in a new place. So I was hired moved out to Sterling, Colorado, and lived there for 4 years. I was the head coach there after 10 months. And, you know, I think I was fortunate that the head coach at the time left to go to Lyon College in Arkansas. And, you know, they announced me as the interim. And we had the best program, the best season in program history that year in 2018. And then it was from there, I was named the head coach, worked at Northeastern for 3 years as the head coach. And then, again, was ready for a change, ready for a new level, ready to kind of ply my trade elsewhere, and reached out to Lewis and very grateful. It was, the stars were aligning and the universe was helping me out, that's for sure. And super lucky and grateful to be here in Colorado Springs. And I think, you know, luck in a way, but also hard work and dedication and being in the right spot at the right time, ultimately. But I think doing, you know, your path, the things will eventually lead you to here. So I like to think that I had a hand in it, but also, you know, I think you got lucky a bit.
And so both of you, when you moved into UCCS, you guys were both in kind of the same situation. And obviously there's the lots of ins and outs of going through a job change of your life circumstances, where your family is, and that's a big decision. But both of you moved from a head coaching position at another school into the assistant coaching position here at UCCS. Lewis, obviously you've moved up since then. But I mean, at face value, that's a step backwards. And kind of that speaks, I think, to your guys' view of the athletic programs here at UCCS. And kind of talk me through, and whichever of you wants to jump in first, how that decision made and what kind of spoke to you about UCCS to bring you here first.
Yeah, so for me, I was in Sioux City, Iowa, Briarcliff University as the head coach. Really enjoyed my time there, 2 seasons. Felt like we had built a program there that was ready for success, and that happened really in 2 years. You know, took over the team when they were, I think, were predicted to finish 9th in the GPAC at the time, and basically ever since my first season there, we're being a top half team, and then, you know, the season I left, they went on and you know, competed for championships pretty consistently, and now they're one of the strongest there. So that was, like, for me, that was my first real taste of being a head coach. I was 23 when I took the head coach job there, you know, and only 25 when I was leaving it. So for me, it wasn't necessarily about going and jumping as quickly as possible to the next head coach position. I think, you know, I was speaking to a lot of people at the time, and they would talk about how coaching in America was changing during that time, because there wasn't really a clear path of what is the next best step. People were leaving college soccer to go and coach at academies. People were leaving academies to go and coach in college soccer. There's obviously lots more professional teams around now that, you know, people are leaving college to go and coach in the pros. There's obviously so many different paths you can take. There's not necessarily one clear path that is set out for a soccer coach in this country anymore. So for me, I just wanted to be part of something that was going to challenge me, somewhere where I was going to grow. But yeah, UCCS for me, you know, it stood out. My wife is from Denver, so there was naturally a pull to be back in this area. That is what ultimately we were looking for. At the time, we were having our first child. Actually received a phone call while my wife was in labor to see if I was still interested in the UCCS position.
Interesting timing.
It was a long process. So I said, hey, you know, do you mind if I go take this phone call? She's like, you know, she's not with her at that point, but she's like, yeah, go ahead. So but anyway, so then obviously but yeah, you know, we came into UCCS and I was just blown away, really. You know, I think that's natural coming from smaller private schools where I had spent the majority of my career before that. You know, facilities, funding, you know, the support from our athletic department has been great since I've been here. And that was, you know, what I was looking for. I was looking forward to being a part of something bigger and better, you know. And I think obviously people talk about the levels all the time, NAIA, D2, D1. I'd say for the most part, in men's soccer in particular, it's pretty fluid. Like there's good teams at every single level. So it's not necessarily about what division you're in. You know, can you get into a strong conference with a program that is strong, you know? And I think at the time, UCCS was doing okay. You know, we're competitive. I just saw the potential and the room for growth being in a place like this with an athletic department like this. I just knew that was where I wanted to be, whether it was head coach, assistant coach, whatever. I just wanted to come in, grow, develop, you know, learn the Colorado soccer map, so to speak, and get involved and grow from there. So that was really what pulled me to UCCS. Obviously, you know, great location, great school, but for me it was just the potential of the program and the potential of the athletic department is there and is still there for sure.
Yeah, and I think when you combine that with living in Colorado Springs, you know, you've got one of the best jobs in the country at this level. We really look at it like that. So coming from myself, you know, coaching in Sterling, Colorado for 4 years at the junior college level, you know, I think that this is a bit of what you'll see from the coaching profession, really at any level and most sports, is that there is going to be this, you know, this path that isn't necessarily linear. Right. And it's not just straight. So I think when you're seeing, you know, the NCAA Division II, RMAC, there's a lot of intrigue there, you know, and there's a lot of people across the country that would love to be in these positions. So, you know, me being in the NJCAA junior college, you know, I was there for 4 years. That's really, you know, where a lot of coaches begin their careers. It's a place to learn and grow. And I saw it as that. So I felt like I got my experience and was ready to test myself elsewhere. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into those type of big decisions. You know, you're moving different locations. And the grass might not always be greener on the other side, but I think when you put together, you know, a vision of a new head coach in Colorado Springs, near Denver, I grew up in Colorado, you know, this is my home, my family's still in Fort Collins. You know, for me, that's why I say, you know, a few minutes ago that I got lucky, because there's only so many jobs in Colorado that are at NCAA soccer. So I think there's a major attraction. So when you are talking about going from a head coach to an assistant, I think, you know, somebody that's not involved in sport, certainly that doesn't understand the coaching profession, would think that, yeah, there's a little step back there. But in no way did I think that. I think going from head coach at a junior college level to the NCAA D2 as an assistant is almost a step up to me.
And so kind of you guys spoke about the area and the soccer in this area briefly. And obviously there's the Olympic Training Center here. You have both Division I and Division II with Air Force, Colorado College, and UCCS. Professional men's soccer came to town in the last 10 years with the Switchbacks, the USL Championship. And kind of obviously that helps you guys as coaches having kind of those resources around. Do you also kind of use those benefits to help in your recruiting processes of trying to win those recruiting battles of if this is a player that we want, bringing those to town and kind of utilizing the stuff around you?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and I think obviously it depends who you're talking to during the recruiting process. Everyone's different, but you know, a lot of players when they come through, they'll say, "I want to go and play professional soccer once I finished at UCCS." And I say, "Okay, great, all right." And so then they ask, "How many players have you sent to play on professional?" You know, and the answer is none right now, right? So we're looking at that and saying, "Well, okay, what sort of opportunities can we provide, and what steps can we take to make sure that we get there, right, and start making that a UCCS thing?" You know, you come to UCCS, you get your degree, you compete in a good environment, and they're going to help you get to where you want to go. And you know, a big thing I told several players last year during the recruiting process was look around, and you where you are geographically is important, right? It's not the be all and the end all, because if you're a baller, you're going to get noticed regardless. But here you have almost every tier of professional soccer and then beyond, right? You have the Rapids MLS, who now have the MLS Next Pro team, right, which is a full professional team. So there's two teams right there.
Yep.
So then a tier down from there, you have the Switchbacks in the USL Championship, who we have a great relationship with the coaching staff there and them as a club. And we've had several players go and train with them for periods of time. And I was with them in the summer helping them coach as well. So, you know, we're very connected there, and we have a really healthy and a relationship that we're proud of. You know, and our guys have benefited from that as well. But then even after that, you have the new USL League One team, Northern Colorado.
Yep, Hailstorm.
Which is another tier down. After that, you have two USL Two teams, which is not professional, but our guys have benefited from playing there in the summer too. And then outside of that, you've got Division One teams, Division Two teams, Division Three teams. So there's every level you want to be in. I just say, like, look, if you're going to come in here in this program and do well, it's hard not to notice you. Right, it's hard not for you to get noticed with so many clubs and professional teams around, and with our networking and, you know, with our connections, you do well, you're going to get noticed and you're going to get an opportunity. I can't promise that you're going to turn professional, but it's certainly an exciting area to be if you want to get noticed, and even if it's not about turning pro for you, you know, if you just want to be in a soccer environment where soccer is important and thriving, look no further, right? It's thriving right now, and you know, we feel strongly that, you know, we have a big job and a big task on our hands, even here at UCCS, to pull our weight, right? Our women's soccer team have been phenomenal for the last few years, you know, and they've been competitive on the national scale and really put UCCS on the map in that regard, you know, and we need to be following that. You know, we need to be on the same path, we need to be pulling our weight, like I said. And you know, I think once we start doing that, you know, I think Colorado Springs in general, and then Colorado, you know, on a wider scale, is it's a soccer place, it's growing, and the interest is growing. Like you know, you find yourself at the Switchbacks games and you know, a few thousand people there, but the atmosphere is electric, it's raw, and you know, I think it's not fake, you know, and people are really enjoying the sport and it's really growing. So, you know, I think we're looking to capitalize on that during our recruiting, but also just from a standpoint of, we want this program, we want men's soccer and soccer in general at UCCS to be what people think of.
Yeah, it was really cool last year to have the Final Four men's and women's be hosted there at the Switchback Stadium, downtown Colorado Springs. And we were able to see that firsthand. You know, I think it, you know, is where we eventually want to end up as a program, and then perennially, you know, being on the national stage, being a part of the conversation with your region, with your conference, and then nationally. So, yeah, you know, the sky's the limit here for UCCS men's and women's soccer. Then when you do tie in, you know, everything that's going on within the community and the state, yeah, I agree with Coach. It's a healthy soccer market. It's a great place to be if you love the outdoors and the game of soccer, you know, and it's been really cool to see the Switchbacks in particular take a notice and just a general interest in their community. You know, they're hosting youth camps and but beyond that, like, they want to play us in a game. You know, we played them in February and they want to have our players at training. You know, we were at the indoor facility with them training on, you know, the field next door. And it's just cool to see that they have a genuine interest in that relationship. I saw the head coach walking through the hallway. You know, he stops and shakes my hand. It's, you know, that's really neat. And I think that's a special thing that we have at UCCS tagged in with the Switchbacks.
And so kind of focusing on last year's season, obviously, especially in the RMAC, year in and year out is kind of anybody's game. Whoever has the right players step up at the right time, and really any school in the conference can have that opportunity year in and year out. For you guys last year, you missed the tournament by just a couple of games. You're right there. And kind of talk to me of how that process of, obviously this was the first year for you two together as a coaching staff. And what was that kind of like as a learning process, and what has that kind of shown you moving forward into this year?
It's shown me that we're in a really tough conference. it's so competitive. It is, you know, and I think a lot of everyone says that about the conference for the most part, because everyone believes they're in a good environment, and for the most part across the D2 level they are. But we feel the exact same way. The RMAC is strong. Teams are only getting stronger, and that's what we spoke about is we feel like we do have a job to do to catch those teams up, but also they're not getting any worse. You know, so the gap isn't shrinking on their end. It's the work that we do recruiting, and it's the work that we do behind the scenes and with our team that is really trying to close that gap on the top teams, you know. And I felt strongly, and, you know, I've had several conversations with Nathan Gibson, our athletic director, about this. I feel strongly that we should be competing right up there, you know, and if it's not right now, it's in a year or two's time, you know, and that's where I feel like we as an institution, as a program, should be. Now, obviously, there's a lot that goes into that. We also play a sport with a lot of variables, right? So sometimes it doesn't even matter if you're the best team, you know. Teams are going to come in and pinch a draw against you or a 1-0 win against you. And, you know, I think we just play a sport where so much is out of our hands as coaches come game day. But we feel like we have done a lot of work over the last 12 months to really put us in a position where we feel like we can compete with those teams. Whether we get the results or not this year, we will compete with the top teams in the conference. And that's where we feel like we're at. You know, last season was... obviously it was tight, and I anticipate it being tight again. I think there's teams, anyone can beat anyone on any given day, you know. Even the so-called lower teams, you know, they make it difficult for you, you know, and especially now with no overtime. I'm sure you've seen across college soccer in general, men's and women's, D1, D2, D3, NAIA, junior college. Well, junior college still have overtime, but everyone else, there's so many draws. So now it's starting to, you know, people are starting to rethink, what does a draw mean? You know, what does that count for? What's a good draw? What's a bad draw? You know, and I think it helps the lower teams for sure, because you now only have to get through 90 minutes of playing defensively, you know, which is a lot more attainable than playing 120
minutes,
10 minutes.
Oh, yes.
Right. You know, so it's changing, but it's going to make it even more difficult, because those teams that maybe don't have the talent or the depth or whatever it is, they might still pick up results, and they're going to, that's for sure. So, you know, I just think, you know, from last year, we were right there. We were close, you know, and obviously we only have 6 teams that make the playoffs. A lot of other conferences have 8 teams and structured differently, but we only have 6, you know, and it just means that it's that much more difficult to get in. And we were right there until the very last game at the end of the season. I think it was still somewhat in our hands. And, you know, I spoke a lot between last season and now about us not having enough depth. Yeah. And that was a big thing for us in our squad last year, is we felt like we had a strong team. And I think on any given day we could compete. We just ran out of fuel at times. And we ran out of, you know, we didn't have players that could come off the bench and maintain certain levels, you know. And that's not a disrespect to those players. It's just we had a lot of true freshmen who, you know, didn't understand or couldn't compete at the level we really wanted them to if we were going to go and win big time games, you know. And those even are players that could go and play for other programs, no doubt. At this level, in this conference, if you want to win games, you have to have depth. And, you know, I look back to our game against Mines last year. We were 2-0 up at halftime. We had a chance right after halftime to go 3-0 up. And that would have been, you know, that's a great position to be in, right?
Right.
We used, throughout that whole game, we used 13 players, I believe, 13 or 14. So 2 or 3 subs. Mines used 23, Keith? 23, 24 correct. Players in that game. Yeah. And to this day, I couldn't tell you who was the starter, who was the sub, you know, and they came on and maintained a level that we couldn't keep up with. And they ended up winning the game 5-2. All five goal scorers were substitutions, guys that didn't start the game. And I just think that was an eye-opener for us. So if you ask, what did we learn, you know, is regardless of your coaching philosophy of how much you want or how little you want to substitute, at this level, to be effective, you have to have depth and true depth. And you know, I think that was a big focus for us in our recruiting. You know, we wanted guys that we wanted good players on the bench. We wanted good players not making the travel squad, you know, which obviously is tough on them, but great problems for us to have. And that's really been where we're at this, to start this season, is we're leaving people, you know, that aren't making the 22-man travel squad that could play a lot of other places. And, you know, I think, and, you know, now we're at that point, we see how important it is, because, you know, every time we look down the bench, we've just got quality ready to come on and impact the game, you know. And I've tried to, it's tough because everyone wants to play. Everyone wants to be in the starting 11. Everyone wants to travel. And it is tough, you know, and try and remind the boys of, you know, your time will come, and, you know, stay motivated, because we will need you at certain times. And, you know, and I also, even just the guys that are on the bench that aren't starting, it's like, well, how much does starting really matter in college soccer? I think at the professional level, where you have 3 to 5 substitutes and they come on late, it matters. At college, I think when you're making subs 20 minutes into a game, 25 minutes into a game, and then the second half, you're rotating certain positions, starting doesn't really matter that much, you know. And that's where we're trying to get out with our team, of it's a collaborative effort. It takes absolutely everyone. And, you know, and we just feel like we're in a much better position depth-wise to now go and compete. You know, we've had a few big injuries, and obviously, you know, Alex is still working his way back from his injury, and he'll be back here in a couple of weeks. You know, but without him, we've picked up good results, and I think that's a good sign. You know, without one of the best players, if not the best player in the conference, without him, we're still picking up results. So it's healthy. We're in a good spot. You know, and we just, that's one big thing that we learned from last year, is to get more depth.
And I spoke with both of you, actually. It's funny that you bring that up after the Mines game last year, just briefly, and it wasn't what I was expecting walking into that conversation, because obviously, like, you're up 2-0 and you lose 5-2. Like, that's devastating, right? But you guys weren't super upset, and more of like, wow, like, this is something that we need to address. And you really, truly just kind of took it as, rather than just what a tough loss it ended up being, kind of that learning lesson. And how important is that, in college, especially with the revolving door of every year you have a different team? And obviously you're going to get that at every level, but more so at the college, at professional level, you can lock up players for extended period of times. But with college, this is the time you have, and you have to make the most of it, and it's going to be different year in and year out. And how do you manage that?
I think, you know, one thing that has impacted that in particular has been obviously the transfer portal. COVID as well, giving players an extra year. You know, you look at someone like Carlos Vargas for us, who joined us in the spring. You know, he played all his college soccer. He played a couple of years at Midwestern State, and before that he was at SMU. He's a big time player. He had one season remaining, and wanted to come home to Colorado, and we were the perfect fit for that. He's an absolute rock, you know, and it's like, I think a few years ago, you'd be looking at it saying, what's the point in getting him for 1 year? Well, now it's like, well, there's so much change. The squads are being reshaped almost every year. Why would I not take him for 1 year? If you can have that level of an influence on our team and come in and make such an impact, why would I not take you for a year? A year is a long time in college soccer. And for us in particular, where we're at as a program, you know, you need a few players like that, whether they're here for a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever. You need a few players that can come in and make a difference right away, you know. And we did that with a few other guys as well that we took from junior college level, who did really well at the junior college level, and because of COVID ended up playing 3 seasons technically there. So just more and more experienced players that are coming in ready to compete and ready to win, you know. And those guys, you know, we took a bunch of guys from a really talented Laramie County team, right? And those guys were at the national tournament at the NJCAA level 3 years in a row, 3 seasons in a row. You know, they know how to win. That's their mindset. And it was a really talented group that we really wanted, and we did. We made an effort, a conscious effort, to get in there and make sure that we got a few of those players as part of our squad this season. But, you know, I think that's one of the biggest things, really, was bringing in players with experience that are ready to compete. You know, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, whatever. We'll take you if you're going to come in, invest yourself in our program. You know,
embed yourself in our culture and really give everything to the team. And they've done that. You know, look, someone like Carlos, it would be really easy for him to show up and go through the motions, you know, and he's been an absolute stud for us. He loves it. You know, I was speaking to him the other day and I asked him, you know, do you feel proud to play for UCCS, you know, and he's like, absolutely, you know, and you've got other coaches recognizing, you know, that have played against him in the past, how happy and how well he's performing here. So a year, even though it doesn't sound like a long time, you can have a big, big impact on a team in one season. I just think that's the way things are going. If you look at the teams that were successful last year, not all of them, but you look at Mesa, you look at Pueblo, who have, you know, had strong seasons. And, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, they've done that by bringing in experience and players that can compete straight away. So, you know, I wouldn't say we're following that model exactly of just bringing in anyone if they have a year left. But, you know, we still want to bring in players that are going to come over and develop, you know, over the course of 4 years. But there's certainly a balance there to be had. And I think if you want success on the field, especially in conferences as tough as ours, we need players that are ready to go.
Yeah, it's been really, you know, really great for me to go from the NJCAA into the NCAA. And you know, the reality is that there's a lot of good players, there's a lot of good coaches, and most of the programs are really solid as well. So for us, the depth was a major focus, and then we also wanted to focus on bringing the team together, bonding them together, about half new, half returning. You know, so we spent a lot of time on that. And I, you know, I've been very, very pleased to see, just to a man, you know, as an individual, each one of them, I think, is going out of their way, just that extra little bit to get to know their teammates. And I think that pushes you a little bit farther when you've got a good squad. There's a lot of good teams out there, right? And it's not always the best team that wins, right? So you look to bond them together and see if you can't get an extra 10% because they're fighting for their brother who they love, and that leads you to victory. So we've done a lot of work on that side too. You know, we're really proud about our group. We love this group, love working with them every day. And then, you know, don't forget about the classroom. We're looking to increase our already strong GPA as a team. And I think really that was one thing we did with this recruiting class was, you'll see that they're all increasing our level, increasing our depth, increasing our experience, but then they're also getting the job done in the classroom. You know, we've been really happy with them off the field. And that's a testament to them as people. So, you know, this group, we're excited. We are. We're excited about what we can do. We're already making some waves statistically, nationally, across, you know, every team in the country. You know, and I think defensively, we're rock solid. It's something that we can really, you know, hang your hat on is defense. And then going forward, those guys will score goals. Those guys are going to create chances. We've already been having the most shots of any RMAC team per game. And then you throw in the defense. We're really excited about this group.
And great segue there. Kind of as this season has gotten started, you guys have been off to an unbelievable start. And side note, you guys beat the number 7 team off the bat in Fort Hays State, which I owe you guys for because my brother actually went to Fort Hays State. So thank you for that. But especially with that thick competition that early, just the second game of the season, you're playing a top 10 ranked team. And we talked about before we started this, that for the first time, you guys are beginning to now receive those top 25 votes. And kind of talk to me about that transition of the lessons you went through last season. This is kind of the first real full season that you guys can do the whole process together as a staff. And kind of to see those results start to flow in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously as the day that the season finished, or if not before, you know, obviously recruiting was the big focus, right? We knew we were going to lose a lot. We knew we had a lot of spots to fill, and we knew we needed players that can come in and take us to a new level. And I think we've done that. I don't think we're not perfect by any means. You know, we don't feel like we're a complete team. You know, we still have levels to go. We still have areas that we need to improve, and we're going to continue to work on that throughout the season. You know, I think we've had a decent start. I know you described it as unbelievable. I'd say decent. And I think on the surface, you know, it's easy to... I'm not a big, like, what ifs guy. I'm not going to go back and say, well, if we didn't do this, this would have happened, right? You know, it's just, it's whatever. We play sport and sport happens. So, you know, but the reality is we were 12 seconds away from being undefeated, right? We conceded a goal with 12 seconds left on the clock to lose our only game against a strong team, but a game that we felt like we had control of. You know, and it was, I think, honestly, you know, to answer your question in a long roundabout way, it was a good lesson for us early on, you know, that we had two throw-ins in the last 60 minutes, sorry, in the last 60 seconds and lost the game. And it was because it was a little bit of immaturity. It was a little bit about us figuring out. And also, like I spoke to the guys about this weekend, it's about kind of rewiring our brains of, you know, coming off of that with a 0-0 draw would have actually been a semi-decent result, and we would have stayed unbeaten and we would have had another clean sheet. And those things are starting to count, whereas I think we got caught in the mindset of, like, let's go win, let's go score. And I'm just like, boys, we haven't scored in the first 89 minutes. Chances of us, you know, going and scoring in the last minute, pretty slim. Not impossible, but pretty slim, right? So I think just trying to reshape what people's thoughts are on what is a good draw and what's a bad draw. But, you know, we've played a tough schedule. I think that's the other thing. You know, I think there's a lot of teams that probably feel like they're in a good spot, but we feel like if you look across the board, Rockhurst have had a strong start to the season. They're going to be a very difficult team to beat for anyone. Fort Hayes, obviously, were ranked number 7th. Really strong team, you know, and then we went to Billings and dropped that game, and obviously it was a kicker, but we learned from it, and it was a good thing to happen early on in the season. You know, we bounced back 2 days later and with a 3-0 win against a Billings team that's improving. You know, and then this weekend we just got two really positive results. You know, we beat Lubbock, which was a good result. You know, it's probably a game that we're now expected to win, but still not an easy game. They're a good team with good players. And then a St. Mary's team that's, it's going to go far this season. You know, we took a 0-0 against us, and, you know, and I think, you know, we've had good chances in that game to win it too. So we're right there. We're competing with good teams, and I think that's going to prepare us well for the RMAC. Obviously, there's still a lot of twists and turns to happen throughout the season. We know that, and we talk to our guys about that. But one real big thing is just building that momentum of positivity, and these results are important, and these clean sheets are important. You know, the statistics, you know, as much as they don't win games, they're important too, because it tells us a lot about how the game went. So, you know, I think it's just building that positivity around the guys. And like I said, we brought in winners. That doesn't automatically mean you're going to win games, but it does kind of infiltrate, you know, our culture in a positive way. And it really sorts of build that, the belief that we can win games, and belief that, you know, we're not going to panic for the last 10 minutes because we're sitting on a lead. You know, we've been in two half times, 2-0 up. And I just, you know, we always talk about it, don't we? But, you know, if we're comparing to last year's team and things like that, like, I just think there's a level of maturity now within this group that knows how to see those games out and ride those waves. Even against Lubbock on last Wednesday, right, I felt like we were in complete control in the first half. They came out, you know, for the first really 10-15 minutes, and they get an early goal, and it's like, oh, you know, we're going to be in for it here, because momentum is a powerful thing. And, you know, again, like I said, they're a good team with players that can hurt you. And I was so impressed with how our guys managed that. You know, and I think obviously our third goal killed the game a little bit, but even just up until that, we managed to ride that wave. We managed to not panic, make smart decisions, clear the ball when necessary, build out when necessary. So I thought that was a big moment for us, like getting through that. And even St. Mary's then on Friday, that was a back and forth game where we had 10 minutes, they had 10 minutes, we had 10 minutes, and we went through their spells of pressure and spells of possession and came out strong for it. So,
yeah, and I would double back on that and to say that really as a group, we focused on that overall belief, right, that we are a good team, that we can win this game, you know. And I think it's it's, you know, a sensitive area for young people. You know, you're not a professional athlete. You haven't trained the mental side of it, right? And so I still remember one of the first things that Lewis would say when I first arrived was that this team has a weak belief system, you know, and so we've worked on that a lot and can say that it's still a work in progress to get us to have that strong belief system that you can do anything and run through a wall and nobody's going to beat you. But we've come a long way. And then the other thing that he touched on was just that, being able to shut the door, being able to put a team away, being able to control a match that you've gotten yourself a lead in. You know, we saw those things kind of rear their ugly head last year, and you know, we said these are some specific areas that we want to focus on. And you know, just talking here in the office as coaching staff, we, so far this season, we're seeing some of those results that we've actually put specific focus into.
And so this week, obviously, you're going to face some RMAC teams, but it's not yet RMAC play. You got two games before the conference season really gets started. But with these two teams in Adams State and CCU, I believe, as the second team, and you're going to see those teams again, and you know that. So kind of how important is it that with the somewhat discounted play of non-conference games, but against that conference competition, how important are these games in terms of knowing where you guys kind of stand in the overall landscape of the RMAC?
Yeah, so if you didn't know, which you probably, I wouldn't expect anyone on, you know, to know this, but basically the way we determine who we play in these non-conference conference games, kind of a gentleman's agreement since we moved away from our old scheduling model, was that we're going to play two RMAC games. And that's going to change year by year based off of where you finished last year. So we ended up finishing ninth. So we were in a pool with the lowest teams. So that's why we, you know, we don't necessarily choose. That's why we're playing these two games. And I think, you know, for us, it's really important. It's really important that, you know, we feel like we should be higher up. Of course, other teams do too. You know, so it's important to kind of say, well, you know, next year we want to play, you know, teams that finished higher up in these two games. And, you know, but listen, for us, it's like anything. It's another game. It's another game for us, whether it's in conference, out of conference, against a conference opponent. You know, it doesn't really matter. We're going to approach the game the same way. We want to go out. We want to win. We want to keep a clean sheet. We want to be dominant in those aspects. So, yeah, for us, you know, very little. We haven't spoken at all, to be honest, to the guys about whether this is a conference games or anything. So it's just, we're rolling in, we're going to do what we do, and that's the approach for these games. But you know, long, you know, from an outside perspective and from certainly from a coaching staff perspective, we want to be in a position where we're finishing higher to where we're not playing in the lowest pool, you know. And that's what we're doing right now as a product of last season, and I think it's kind of a good tangible step for us is, okay, you know, let's make sure we're in a higher pool next season, which I'm confident we will be. You know, obviously, like I said, there's still lots of twists and turns that happen throughout the season and all of that, but you know, we feel like even last season with the team we had, we should have finished higher, you know. But we also recognize that it's extremely tight, and if you did replace us with a team that finished higher and then put that team in ninth, they'd be saying the same thing just because of how tight it is. So, you know, I'm not saying we were better than anyone or anything like that. I just feel like we were competitive and probably deserved a little bit more, but that's football. So.
And so as we begin to move into the RMAC season, obviously the goal is to win the RMAC tournament, make it to the RMAC tournament, be that team that's standing on top of that mountain. Obviously, you guys are confident in your ability to do that this year. And what kind of do you look at to say, obviously, health is a big thing, but what are the things that you can control that you say, if we do these things the right way, we'll get to that point?
We just believe in the process. We believe in every day getting a little bit better as a team, guys doing their jobs, trust. You know, like Keith said, we put a lot of focus on being a close family, you know, and that was something that can't be faked, you know, that has to be organic, and we've been really pleased with that progress. And I just think if we can help that in any way, it sets us up for success, because the talent for me is there, ready to compete. We have the talent that's ready to compete with the top teams. I truly believe that. Whether it finds a way to win the games or not is left to be desired. And I'm really excited for it. I'm really excited for the big games. And, you know, it's just going to be a good kind of measuring tool for us to see, all right, okay, where are we at? Because it's easy for us to sit here and say, yeah, we have a talented team and we feel ready. But to go out and do it and see out a game and go through that period of pressure against good teams without them scoring and doing that dirty stuff, you know, I think that's going to be the real test. But in terms of things that we can control, I think, you know, just really stamping out the culture, stamping our culture on the team as best as possible, what we believe in as coaches, as playing a successful way of soccer, an attractive style of soccer, and then really bringing the team together. I think those are the sorts of the things that we can have influence on. I wouldn't say control, but I would say influence. We can have influence on that. And I think those have been areas of focus that we've been pleased with so far, but still a big season ahead of us. So,
yeah, specifically if we look at soccer on the pitch, I want us to improve set pieces. We get in a lot of corner kicks. We're leading the conference in corner kicks. You know, we need to score those. We've been very happy defensively, though, and I think those are things that we can hold on to that'll get us through some of these tough moments and really something that we can hold our hat on. I know, like I said, there was the Final Four here in the Springs last year. We were there. The best team, I don't think, was the team that won it. You know, they were the best defensive team. They were the hardest team to score against. You know, and I think that's what we have right now going for us, and we want to get even tighter. We want to improve that defense even more to where, yeah, it's not about us losing games. It's about if we can score a goal, we're going to win. So I think those, you know, and then we also, you know, it's you know, health and injuries. And then, you know, we always talk every fall, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. You know, I mean, there's typically something off the field, you know, that it's going to take some focus away and make us come together maybe as a group even more, or maybe it's going to challenge one or two individuals, and those things will happen. So 31 guys with the coaching staff, you know, all those different lives, we're going to have to be ready for some challenges that we still yet to know. And if we can handle those well, plus continue to do the things that Coach was mentioning, we're going to be right there at the end.
And so we're about to get going with the conference season, and I just want to wish you guys the best. I appreciate you taking some time to sit down with me. Hopefully it comes with some fruits and good health, and I'm excited to see where it takes you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. Appreciate your time as always.
Awesome, guys. Good luck. That was Lewis Wilcox and Keith Baderis of the men's soccer program. And thanks again to Lewis and Keith for taking the time to sit down with me. Always a great time to sit down with them. They're very, they'll tell you how it is. And I mean, they covered it all. And I want to give them some credit, because just watching that team this year, you can see the strides that they've taken overall. They're a confident group. They believe in each other. They're playing for each other a lot more than they have in past years. And, I mean, the results are starting to flow in. Like we said, they've received votes, for 2 weeks in a row now. It's the first time that that's happened in several years. I'm campaigning hard for them to get that top 25 ranking. It'll be the first time that has happened for this program since the 90s, and that's a huge accomplishment. I mean, I was not alive in the 90s, for that, what that's worth. But that team deserves some recognition, and they've put in the work, and that work is starting to pay off, and that's a really cool thing to see for the men's soccer team. So credit to Lewis Wilcox and Keith Pederis. They're running a really good ship out there. If you haven't been to any of our men's soccer games yet this year, I encourage you to do so. They are a very fun team to watch. They're on the ball. They know where each other are without having to really communicate too much. They understand what's trying to be done. They're helping out each other on defense, forwards coming back, defenders coming up to fill gaps on offensive breaks. Those set pieces that Keith mentioned, they're starting to fall in a lot more. So, I mean, just even today, they got that result in Westminster 3-0. They've got a big game coming up here on Sunday against Colorado Mesa. That'll be kind of their first really big test in the RMAC against Colorado Mesa. I mean, honestly, coming into today, I thought that that Westminster game could go either way, and they that was a commanding win from them in Salt Lake City. So they'll finish up business in Salt Lake tomorrow, and they will head back to Grand Junction and take on the Mavericks of Colorado Mesa on Sunday. Around athletics, outside of that, volleyball tomorrow, Galaglia Event Center, 3 p.m., the Cowgirls of New Mexico Highlands University are in town. Kind of one same deal as the Adams State game today. They need to pick up that win. They're sitting bottom of the conference right now. They were second to last before their win tonight. They'll move up, but they just need to start chalking up these wins for volleyball. They've got the ability to do it. They need those one or two players to step up. Riley Babcock has been outrageously good. She's got like the volleyball team as a whole has 500 assists, and Riley Babcock herself has like 400 of those assists, which is mind-boggling to me. Obviously, she's the starting center, setter, I should say, main setter. So obviously she's going to rack up assists, but 400 out of 500 for the team is impressive in my mind. Reagan Emery has stepped in. Lauren Shockley went down with the injury. Camden Strain out with the injury. Reagan has stepped up in a big way on that attacking path. Part of the team. Nicole Medlin had a really good night tonight as well. She's both ways. She led the team in blocks tonight. I think she had 7, had a bunch of kills as well, including some crucial ones down the stretch in the fourth set to close that out. So volleyball, once again, kind of on the come up. This year's kind of up in the air for them still. Obviously, there's 5 ranked volleyball teams in the RMAC nationally, so it's a thick woods out in front of them in terms of the RMAC layout, but they're right there, and give it a year or two and they're going to be something special. So keep an eye on volleyball, cuz they're fun to watch as well. Women's soccer, they dropped that game against Westminster today. They did pick up 2 wins last weekend to start off RMAC play, so they are 2-1 overall. They're going to play Colorado Mesa after the men's game on Sunday. Men's game is at 2:30 p.m. Women's game will follow that up at 3 p.m. That's a big game for the women's soccer team as well. Kind of will start to set out what the rest of the season will potentially look like for women's soccer. Obviously, they had a great season last year. Made it to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament. Will they have a year like that again? Realistically, probably not. With lots of the faces that have left the program, it's going to be hard to get back to that level of play. Do they have the talent on the roster and the ability to get back to that same level? Absolutely. And it's not out of the question. I mean, just when you bring in as many new faces and change up the lineup as much as they've had to, it's hard to repeat that. But I mean, JB runs a great program down there. They've got a lot of returning players, so they're kind of the wild card team, I would say. They're going to be good. They're going to be up there. Will they make the RMAC tournament? I think absolutely they will. Whether or not they win that tournament and move on to a regional and beyond, kind of up to them. It all depends on how things fall and how they begin to gel with each other. So another good team to keep your eye on if you're a fan of UCCS athletics. It's just going to, we're going to have to wait and see a little bit with the women's soccer team. So moving forward as well, cross country, women's cross country, they won't be back until October 1st. That will be the Live in Lieu cross country classic 5K. That is a big tournament for cross country across the United States. That will include D1 teams, some professional runners will run in that. So kind of that's a great litmus test for the women's team. They're top 10 ranked in the country. They deserve to be there. It'll be interesting to see how that begins to pan out. That is a week from Saturday, which is tomorrow. The men's team will be here in the Springs at Monument Valley Park, where the Rust Buster also was run. But this time it will be Colorado College's race, the CC Ted Castaneda Invite 8K for the men's team on Saturday, this coming Saturday, I should say. So they're, I want to say, mid-teens ranked now. So right there with the women's team, nationally ranked, they're going to do good things. Got a little bit of a break here between the Roadrunner MSU Denver Invite for both sides before they go on these trips. So it'll be good to get some rest under their belts and see what they can do this coming weekend. For golf, they'll be back in action October 3rd. That is a Monday for the men's team. They will be in the Ryan Palmer Foundation Invitational down in Canyon, Texas. West Texas A&M is hosting that tournament. For the women's team, they'll be down in Texas as well, but they'll be in Dallas at the DBU Regional Preview. Once again, both of those teams started out at CCU, kind of middle of the pack for both the men's and women's team. So onwards and upwards for golf. Their women's team picked to finish first in the conference in the spring. Men's team was picked second. So they've got the talent. It's just whether or not they can put in tournaments with five golfers that are all putting in good rounds. And that's the toughest thing about golf at the college level. You get five golfers for the tournament. You have to choose which five you're going to put out before they travel. And then whatever those five golfers do is what you're going to be able to put out there. So if your five golfers golf better than everyone else's five golfers, then you win. If one or two of your golfers have a really rough day and everybody else is performing well, then you don't do so well. I mean, everybody knows how golf goes. So, but yeah, it's going to be a great week coming up here. Soccer, kind of all eyes on them. For me, at least, I'm on the top 25 men's soccer train. So I don't know if any of the voters for the top 25 listen to this podcast. If you do, vote for UCCS men's soccer. They deserve it. They're putting in the hours, and they're a fun team to watch. Women's soccer team, they're receiving votes. If they can go out and win that game against Colorado Mesa, I think that they're still in that conversation as well. Will they move into the top 25 after dropping the game today? I would say probably not, but if they can go win that game against Colorado Mesa, that could put them over that hump into kind of the 20 to 25 range. But that would certainly keep them in the conversation and keep them receiving votes. So, we'll see what happens. We've got some big soccer games, a good volleyball match on campus if you're looking for something to do tomorrow. So yeah, that's all I've got for you guys this week. A special thanks again to Lewis Wilcox and Keith Bedaris for sitting down with me, and MJ Arjumandi, as always, for his contributions. And I will see you guys next week. Fall is here. October is right around the corner. So we're getting right into the thick of these fall sports conference play. And it's every team around campus here, even if they're not getting those winning results, they're playing hard and they're fun to watch, from volleyball to soccer to cross country to golf. So, and before you know it, I mean, only about a month away now will the winter sports and basketball start to kick up. So, fun things are happening around UCCS. Make sure you make it out to Gallaglee tomorrow, and I will speak to you all next week. Until then, be safe. Have a great week. And this has been the Mountain Lion Chalk Talk Podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.